Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Command Post.
Hey, welcome everybody to Fire Engineering Talk Radio and to our show, The Command Post. I'm Chief Rick Lasky, along with my good buddy, Chief John Salka, and we've got another good one for you tonight. Buddy, we're all set for FDIC. Classes are looking good.
Yeah, we're all lined up. We got all our stuff sent in, jumping through all the hoops and ready to go.
For our listeners, April 8th through the 13th, it's the Clarion Fire and Rescue Group now, Clarion, formerly known as Penwell. The new owners love the conference as well as a bunch of other things, and this is going to be a great year, as they always are. But if you're looking, quick announcement, I know a couple of people, John, have been asking us, now that we have the dates finally on our on all our programs, when we're teaching. So quick note for our listeners, we're going to be doing, and Chief Halton asked us to do two of the same programs again because we kind of had overflowing, we filled the rooms up last year, and they want us to do it again to be able to get everybody in. We're going to be doing a pre-conference workshop for our workshop, and that'll be on Monday during the hands-on training days and the workshops, okay? That's the Chief Officers Field Training Program. This is a portion of our the Chief Officer Field Training Program that we do. That's a two-day program that you'll see very shortly, but it's a portion of it. John, I was overwhelmed and honored that we had a room full of people like we did last year for that one.
Absolutely, and it's as a lot of you know, and if you don't know, you can look into it. Rick and I, Chief Lasky and I, both do a Company Officer Academy out. It's a separate freestanding class that we do out all over the country. As a result, a lot of folks are saying that they don't get a lot of company officer training when they make the jump from the back step to the front seat. So we're out there doing it, knocking them dead, having a great time. You know, both of us have been on the job and in a lot of different officer ranks for many, many years. And just sharing our experiences and pretty well received by most of the folks that are out there either already sitting up in the front seat or maybe preparing for it. And occasionally we even get a guy that's, riding the front seat for 5 or 10 years and says, man, it would have been easier to know this stuff the first 5 years rather than find it out now. But to cut to the chase, what I'm really talking about is the Chief Officers class that we're going to do at FDIC. It is it's sort of a lead-in. It's sort of a highlight of a brand-new program that we now have out, which is a Chief Officer base. It's a Chief Officer field program. Not the chief of department sitting down at headquarters, not staff chiefs and logistics and things of that nature, but a field chief. If you've got a chief, whether it's a district chief or a battalion chief, somebody that works the field, goes on runs, stops by firehouses, commands operations, deals with local discipline issues and things of that nature. We put a two-day class together for that. And this at FDIC is a primer, basically, on that two-day class. And we were well-received last year. We were tearing through it at 90 miles an hour, maybe a little faster than we're comfortable doing, but we wanted to get as much of the information in as possible. And as I said, it was well received. The attendees, a lot of folks, stayed afterwards to ask questions and get more information on it. So if you are going to be around for the early portions of the conference, when the hands-on is going on outside, that's when we're inside. Obviously, that's when those programs are going on.
Well, and again, John, you and I have been doing the chief officer stuff for a long time. We've done some battalion chief classes, and this is like the company officer academy. We were doing company officer stuff, folks, beforehand for years, and it was just, all right, what do we have to do, like John said, to fine-tune this to make it a little bit more packageable, if you will, for someone who's either newly promoted, going to be promoted, or, future promotee, or working towards that company officer's rank. Same thing with this. We both of us did for the Portland Fire Department in Oregon. We did a battalion chief's class out there, Sacramento, California. We did it for Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, in New Hampshire, kind of bouncing around all over the place. And same, just like John said, it's time to fine-tune this one and you know, deliver it and something that people could just say, look, this is. And John, we had a, like you said, we had a lot of people that have been through the company officer academy, like, okay, you know, it's been several years now, I'm getting ready to promote to battalion chief or test for it or whatever. Where's the next step? And we're going to be able to deliver that to them.
Right. And it only makes sense. It's you know, a natural progression. Certainly in the fire service, we love. I love both when I was in the job and a couple of different fire departments that I've served on. It's great to see young firefighters, you know, aspiring, preparing, and doing it, making a move to company officer. And then, not that you forget about it, but, you know, you break them in and you mold them and you get them, you know, some experience. And all of a sudden you realize, holy cow, 5, 6, 7 years has gone by. This guy's getting ready to study for the next rank. This guy's getting ready to move into the battalion car, into the buggy. So it's a natural progression for some people. And I'm glad some people don't move. It's a pleasure to have folks like Tim Klett that have been a lieutenant for, you know, 100 years and they know what they're doing. I just looked on Facebook today and there was a firefighter from the FDNY retiring after, I believe it was 34 years as a firefighter in the same building. And I said, what a wonderful thing to have. A couple of guys with 34 years on the back step that have been there all that time and know what's going on and have a lot of experience. But for those that are moving on, and we need those as well, we need a good mix, it's great. The only real difference between the company officer and the chief officer training that we're talking about is the numbers. Obviously, lots and lots and lots of people want to be company officers, are about to be company officers. When you get to the chief's rank, obviously the numbers dwindle. The numbers get very low. So we're talking about smaller classes. We're talking about a 2-day class instead of a 3-day class. But certainly there's enough material there for everybody. And between the classes that we run ourselves and if Columbia Southern comes along with us on our chief class as well, like they did with the Company Officer Academy, it's probably going to be a smaller audience, you know. But we're going to work out all the details and logistics, and I'm sure it's going to be a well-received class as well.
Hell, we're already working on part two, if you think about it. We got, you know, part one that you know, just described, and there's, you know, part two is going to be, we won't get into too much of the content here, obviously, but if you want to see a little teaser, with some great information, and again, the program we're doing at FDIC is we had a ball with it last year. A lot of great feedback on it. We're going to be doing issues and challenges again with Bobby Halton, with Chief Halton, on Thursday in the afternoon. Now, again, the first one's on it's Monday, 8 a.m. to noon. These are the ones you have to register for, folks. I want to mention that before we move on. For Monday and Tuesday, you have to register for the workshops because seating is limited. And you don't want to, this would happen last year as we filled it up and there was people wanting to get in. They couldn't get in because we filled the seats. So make sure you get online and you get registered now if you're going. Again, the Chief Officers Field Training Program, Monday, all right, this April at FDIC from 8 to noon. The issues and challenges, the rest of the open, the general session classes, folks, are open. You just walk and go to whichever one you want. Just make sure you get your card swiped so you get a certificate, you get credit for it, especially if you need the CE hours too. But the issues and challenges of the fire service, that's going to be on Thursday from 1:30 to 3:15. And, John, last year we had a great time with that one. I think that's one of the best ones we've had was the one we had last year.
You know, I do too, and I think in large part that was because some events had unfolded during the previous year, you know, since the last class in America, in the fire service. So I think it gave us an opportunity to branch out a little bit and to get into some. You know, we say it every year. There's a certain number of questions that just keep coming up. And it's not that it's boring and it's not that they're unimportant, but they're constant issues. And, you know, every year we have some new people there that are facing that issue maybe for the first time. And next year there'll be somebody else that's facing it there for the first time. But as I just said, there were some new issues that came up, which gave us an opportunity to have a little fun with those. There's the regular steady ones that come up all the time, but then there were some new ones as well. And God knows you and I and Bobby all spend some time discussing and thinking and brainstorming on some new ideas that we can drop out there if the microphones go silent. You know, if the audience slows down, we always have a handful of items that we can throw on the floor.
Well, like I said, last year's was just so much fun. And then we've got the 3 degrees of Mayday again. We're doing that one again. That's on Friday. This is another breakout session. Friday from 8:30 to 10:15 to 3 degrees of Mayday. Another one. We filled the room last year. We had them backed up against the wall last year. That was. We got to see if we can get Don Abbott to come sit in there again with us.
Hey, and you know what? I mean, and so far the show host, this show so far tonight has been just us blowing smoke up each other's butt here. But all kidding aside, that class in particular was I think really well attended. Not because of us, not because of the name of the club, but because of the topic. You know, May Day and Firefighter Survival is always, always, always a well-attended class. I don't think there's too many instructors from anywhere with any kind of experience at all that don't have, you know, a lot of the seats full when they start talking about May Day and survival and rescue and trapped firefighters and the like. Having said that, I think there's plenty of room, you know, for other topics as well. The interesting thing, however, about May Days and rescuing trapped firefighters is there's a lot of talk about it. There's a lot of classes about it. There's a lot of theories and a lot of programs. There's not a lot of experience, not anywhere, not anywhere. I did 33 years with the FDNY. I was in rescues. I was in squads. I was in a 1-8 battalion, blah, 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 blah. And I can count on one hand the number of fires that I went to where a May Day was transmitted. Okay? So, you know, regardless of that, regardless of where you work, volunteer, paid, big department, small department, it's an issue, it's a tactic, it's a skill that not a lot of people have too much experience at all. I'm going to say not a lot of people have a lot of experience because nobody has a lot of May Day experience. Nobody has a RIT experience. But not a lot of people don't even have experience. They might have one incident, or they might have one incident that happened in their department on the shift before them. So, and I'm not talking or knocking anybody for that. What I'm saying is there's not a lot of experience out there, but there's a lot of interest. There's a lot of interest in the topic and in the tactics. And the reason I mentioned those two issues, there's a lot of interest, but there's not a lot of history or a lot of experiences. There's a lot of stuff that written out there. There's a lot of issues. There's a lot of tactics. There's a lot of code words. There's a lot of stuff out there that are, and if you've been to the class, you know what I'm going to say, that are nonsense. Because there are people out there that think stuff up and try stuff and do it once or twice and commit it to paper, to an article or a chapter or a lesson, and all of a sudden there's people out there reciting it and doing it, and we discover, wait a minute, this isn't going to work. It's not right, or it hasn't been done 3 times yet. And so without being particular about particular issues or particular words, it's a great, great topic. May Day and RIT and all the associated programs that go along with it are great. And this particular one that we have, I think, is a different angle, the 3 degrees of May Day. It sort of breaks May Days down. It doesn't break it down. It sort of expands the May Day topic and the May Day skills into a broader range of skills. It's not just every May Day is not the same. Every RIT team is not the same. Everyone is different, and they sort of expand based on the number of people involved and the size of the building and all sorts of other stuff. So if you're interested in that, that'd be a great class to attend. And we do handle lots of questions and explanations and et cetera, during that class. It's a very, I thought that was a successful first time for us there.
Well, and I'll just say this, John, before we move on to a couple more things before we get going on our topic tonight. You know, again, to those that think RIT sucks, to those that think RIT doesn't work, why don't you call the guys from Dallas, Texas? Great article was done on it. Great follow-up was done on it when they had a collapse, when a floor collapse, and ended up going in after their firefighters. Our good friend Scott Thompson, Chief Scott Thompson from the Colony, his son's on Dallas, and sat through the PIA and another one and everything else, and for another particular fire. But I was talking with Scott the other day, John, about this, and it's like it worked. And you know, so again, you know, no one ever said the RIT teams are going to save everybody, but we have backups for everything else. Why not for when we're inside fighting a fire, right? You know?
Right, right. Absolutely.
And let me see here. Oh, there we go. And as always, folks, we've got some great classes coming up. If you're looking to host any, if you want us to come out, you want to, you know, see what we're doing or whatever, if you're looking to host a Company Officer Academy, one of the ones that John talked about, or Chief Officer Academy, hit us up. We can get you lined up with us or with CSU. Or you can run to my website calendar. Anything John and I are doing together is on that calendar. And just a reminder, I'm going to be at EMS today. That's the GEMS Conference and Exposition in Maryland in February. That's the 20th through the 22nd. I'm honored to be there. That'll be a good time. Some great people. And before we move on, today is December 6th, 2018. Don't want to move forward without saying a little prayer and remembering Lieutenant Joe Samick, who lost his life today, December 6th, 1989. I will say this, John, I've said it before, and you know this, he is the reason there is a Save and Roam program. That was the fire, folks, if you've been through any of my classes where I've talked about, you know, where an idea comes from. That was December 6, 1989, and there really was no Ritter Mayday. Nobody was practicing firefighter rescue, and as a result of a horrible incident where we lost one of our own, fell into a basement, a lot of contributing factors with that one, like there always is. We came up with the Saving Our Own program, and at the same time, my buddy, co-host on the show, Chief John Salka, came up with Get Out Alive, and as a result of some horrible things that went on, some losses, bad losses with the FDNY, that's how we ended up teaching together. But just wanted to say a little word to remember Lieutenant Joe Samick on this day. A great guy, funny guy, a fire buff, into the job. I'm telling you, this guy was into the job like very few people I know, John. Very few people I know were into the job. We used to chase fires in the city together and take pictures and teach classes and do things. Or just, you know, it was all about the fire service, and couldn't get enough of it. We need more like him. So,
additionally,
all right.
Rick, additionally, this week, the first week or 10 days, 12 days in December, is the anniversary of the Worcester tragedies, not just the one where they lost the 6 firefighters in 99 at the coal storage warehouse, but several years later, they lost a rescue firefighter collapse in Worcester as well. So our thoughts and prayers are with our brothers in Worcester who have lost so many guys at this time of year in the past.
Oh, and John, and not to dwell on any specific loss per se, but December, you just mentioned Worcester and then the tragedy, the horrible times that went on there for those. And that's a great fire department, some great people. But December, they just listed him on fire rescue. You know, Bill Carey and them did with, you know, Buffalo with the gas explosion, and just, oh my God, there was just so many. December's just a bad month, just a horrible month. And we just need to remember we lost a lot of great people. You know, this month, and I know we lose them throughout the year, but December, John, for some reason,
right.
You know,
right.
not good. Absolutely. Hey, buddy, let's talk about our topic tonight, and you and I were visiting about this the other day. You know, you did an article on Senator John McCain, and I brought that up to you the other day because we were talking about this topic, tonight's topic, your legacy. And this is for our listeners and anyone. Let's talk about your legacy as a person, as a firefighter, as an officer, as a chief, and watching everything go on with President Bush, the funeral and first of all, what are your thoughts on everything? I just was overwhelmed the other day. I was bawling like a baby.
Yeah, you know, maybe it's because I'm 60 years old. Maybe it's because I was around and remember him very well when he was president, even though it was 30 years ago. Certainly that was that's when I was 30 years old, and I was certainly, you know, on the job and voting and had a family. And it's so true, a lot of the things that they were saying on TV about how, you know, the topic we're talking about. But as a matter of fact, you know, your legacy, it was one of George Bush's least favorite words. He said he hates the word legacy because, you know, he wasn't thinking about legacy. He was thinking about doing the right thing at the right time when he was in office and all that. Certainly, there are people that didn't think that much of him back then that think a whole lot more about him now. Because obviously, after 20 or 30 years, and you know who else? The next guy left, Jimmy Carter, a guy that wasn't my favorite president, another one-term president, another guy that didn't fare very well in the White House, in and out very quickly. But probably one of the nicest, most caring, most service-minded guys on the planet. You know, up until he was 60, 70 years old, he was climbing to the roof of houses for Habitat for Humanity and building homes for poor people and stuff like that. But back to George H.W. Bush, it was, I had a difficult time pulling myself away from the TV on and off, on and off, on and off for the past couple of days. And it was just, boy, I said it a couple of times while watching the show with a couple of different people. You know, I was home for the last couple of days saying, boy, oh, boy, can we give a guy a send-off? I mean, it was the closest thing It was the closest thing to like a royal wedding or a, you know, some type of a thing with a king or a queen. It was just absolutely dramatic, and certainly the guy deserved it. And you know, at every turn something else came up. First it was, you know, the three or the four people that got up and spoke about him. Just those four alone. As each one went up, you thought, oh, you can't hear anything better than that. Then the next one was, you know. And then the fact that he had the send-off at the National Cathedral, and certainly all the military pomp and circumstances, always, always very, very impressive. And very similar on a much grander scale, but very similar to our own, you know, procedures and you know, history of sending off five that are killed in the line of duty. And the train ride and everything else. It was just, I thought it was very, very, very dramatic and almost uplifting, you know, and it may sound crazy, but to me, funerals like that are almost uplifting because it almost gives you a view like, wow, look what this guy did. Look how he lived. Look what the people around him think of him. And it almost inspires you to maybe I'll do a little bit better tomorrow. You know what I'm saying? And I'm not comparing presidents to retired fire chiefs, but, you know, everybody's life is important to them and everybody's family is important to them. And sometimes, When you sit back and watch an event like this or a series of events like this unfold, when they're sending somebody off, sometimes it gives you a little spark. It lights you up a little bit and says, you know what, I guess we should be happy we're all still on the right side of the grass and breathing, and we get a chance to maybe do a couple of nice things for some folks, you know?
Well, and I like how you said that about uplifting because, you know, everybody thinks of funerals, memorials, you know, kind of on a, you know, sad, you know, down wake. You're not supposed to be doing handsprings and stuff, but, you know, you and I did this a while back on one of our episodes for 9/11. John, remember we chose not to talk about what happened that day, but talk about the lives of those people and the funny stuff. Remember we talked about, you know, Billy McGinn and the Billy Pizza and talked about Andy and talked about Ray, you know, all the kind of, you know, I think sometimes I like sometimes when you go and you're, and you said that, and I'm like, I'm thinking, and even, I think even one of the reporters even said earlier, one of the reporters in the interview was saying, they kept talking about him smiling, him and Barbara smiling, you know, the train ride and it just, you know, how he even said when he rode you know that train years ago, that if he had known it was like that, he would have left Air Force One back, you know, each time, and just, you know, how much he loves A&M and how much, you know, all the different things. And, you know, yes, there was some sadness, yes, it's a loss, but it was a celebration. I think that even his, you know, the family said it, this is more about a celebration. 90 something years old, and you look at what he did.
And what did they say?
You know,
right? I mean, it was a celebration of a life well lived. Or my favorite movie, It's a Wonderful Life. I mean, they're parallel statements. They're really saying the same thing, a wonderful life or a life well lived. And boy, oh boy, not the folks that have died young, like you were talking earlier, you know, some of the people that we know in the fire service, 9/11 related and otherwise. You know, we're in a business that sometimes people do die young. But I know people that died young that still had a wonderful life. My friend Ray Phillips died 64 years old a couple of years ago now. And Ray had a wonderful life. God, I would have loved to have been there for his daughter to get married and see his grandchildren someday that'll be born. And you know, and it's a crime and it's sad that won't happen. But, you know, a life well lived. I mean, you look at George Bush, obviously, H.W. Bush. He lived up into his 90s, which not a lot of people do to start with. Of course, he lived a charmed life to some degree, too. You know what I'm saying? He worked hard. Nobody handed him a bucket full of money day one. He worked hard. He joined the military and not only paid his dues, but did what was right. But everything sort of went really well in his life, like at every turn. And I thought it was funny. During one of the interviews, somebody was talking. I think it was one of the priests was talking at one of the ceremonies. And 3 years ago, we were at a Bush event at the farm, or maybe it was down in Houston, or if it was up in Maine. And he said, and the priest that was conducting the ceremony, you know, threw a question. I said, I mean, who's got a perfect life? You know, and he was throwing it out there, like not expecting anybody to raise their hand. And George Bush raised his hand, and said, "Yep, right here, perfect. My family, perfect. My kids are great." And it was, he said, it was just so funny because it really was true. You know, so the guy did have a wonderful life, and sometimes, like we did back the last time we had that discussion, sometimes you you have to look at it. You have to look at, you know, your mom and your dad and your uncles and aunts. And I know when tragedy strikes, somebody young is killed in a car accident or they get sick and die suddenly. There's nothing. You mean, but years later, you might say, you know what, they did pretty well, even though maybe they didn't get past 60 or 70 or 80. I don't know what young is anymore. I'm 60, so I feel like that's still pretty young. But pretty wonderful life and a life well lived. And of course, like was said about 500 times in the past 3 or 4 days, was it was all about service. You know, people that are serving themselves for their whole lives don't get a send-off like that. Not that everybody who lives a great life does, but George Bush and most of the Bush people, most of the Bush family, they were raised to appreciate that and to deliver service to people, and that was their contribution, you know. So and I think we're the same way in the fire service. You meet guys in the firehouse that the first thing to do is jump on a new guy, jump on a new officer, say, come here, let me show you something. Make sure you do this. Make sure you do that. Here's where we keep this. This is a great place to work. And then you get other guys that are negative saying, oh, make sure you do this. Make sure you don't do that. So, you know, legacy is – that's another thing they mentioned today. Legacy starts your first day on the job, not your last week on the job. You don't start thinking about your legacy. Gee, what about my legacy? Too late, Bubba. Your legacy starts on day one. It's what you're doing every day when you're just normally living and working and coming to work and how you treat people. And somewhere along the way, eventually you retire and people say, what was he like? Oh, Lasky, he was great. He was a good guy. And, you know, so I thought that was pretty early. It's what you do early that determines how people look at you later on in the game.
Well, we've been saying that for a long time, John, especially to, you know, to the young firefighters. I know you do it in your class and I do it in mine, that your legacy started the moment you walked in the door. And how many times you hear somebody, you know, we're having coffee at a firehouse, John, and, you know, and somebody say, you know, you ask them, so what's next for you? What are you going to do? What are you going to try to promote? You're not, you stay. Well, I really want to do something. I really want to begin to form my, you know, my legacy. How am I going to leave this place? And I'm kind of like, you know, that's where I go back and, well, you've already been doing that. You know, it doesn't kind of just appear one day. And I think, John, I think it's kind of like when we talk about mentors. Nobody walks around with a mentor name tag. But yet there's people that are mentors out there to people that don't even know they're being a mentor. They're just, they care. They want to have an impact on people's lives. They want to share. They want to teach. They want to train. You know, they want to help people progress and all that stuff. And don't even know that what they're doing is mentoring somebody. And on the other hand, a lot of people don't realize how many times in class have we talked about mentors and people come up later and go, you know, I didn't realize that's who you're talking about, but see that guy over there? He's been my captain for 8 years. He's my mentor. You know, so there's not a name tag, and there's no booklet that says, okay, here's the legacy instruction booklet. Let's
right.
talk about
right.
leaving your legacy.
Right.
You know. So what would you say, you know, and obviously you guys do the Proby book and the FDNY. I think you still do that ever since 9/11, the Proby book, but the diaries, their journals. What would you say, you know, what do you say to a new firefighter if you got the academy in front of you about, you know, this is your first day. We always tell them it's going to fly by. Let's say you do this for 30 years. The 30 years is going to fly by. You know, Eddie Enright's always said what? Always leave it a little bit better for the next guy. How do you start working, you know, into that, John? We talked about it starts with your first day. What should a young firefighter be looking for?
Well, I
what
mean,
can they do?
It's so simple, yet it's so complex. I can only tell you what this young firefighter did. I came out of high school. I was I probably had a pretty ordinary childhood. I was on, you know, Little League, and I was on a football team in high school. I didn't play much, but I went to every practice. You know, I had a pretty ordinary. I joined the volunteer fire service pretty early. You know, whatever you want to call that, semi-military organization to some degree. But I would just call myself a pretty typical guy when I joined the FDNY or joined the Mineola Fire Department, my first volunteer firehouse. And by far, the most valuable, absolutely, the most valuable event, the most valuable piece of advice I could give anybody based on what happens, and we were just talking about it, forget the word mentor. Find somebody to start following. Find somebody to start imitating. Find somebody and say, wow, look at that guy, look at that girl, look at that officer, look at that firefighter. I remember doing that in the FDNY. I remember sitting around, not sitting around too much, but standing around, let's say, as a probie, and watching and listening everything on the apparatus floor, on runs, in the kitchen, after dinner. You know, no matter where I was, my ears were open. I was listening to how people were talking, and I was watching how people were treating each other and how officers were treating firemen and firemen were treating officers and back and forth. And without doing anything, just really observing, I started to form some behaviors right away and some ways of talking. I mean, I've talked about that. We talk about that in the class, about conforming, right? How conforming is our business. Conforming is excellent. We get people off the street that worked at McDonald's, they worked in Carvel, they worked at a hotel, they worked for Con Ed Electric Company, and now they're in a firehouse. And guess what? I don't know what you did, where you came from, but here's what we do around here. You know, here's how we act, here's what we say, here's how we behave, here's what we're allowed to do, here's what we're not allowed to do. And like I said, the only advice I can give a new young firefighter, or even a new officer, because sometimes you have to start over as an officer, is, you know, find your mentors. Find a great person to follow and imitate and mimic and learn from. And I think Baker said it today, you know, George H.W. was one of his best friends. They've known each other for decades and decades and decades. And he said he was like my big brother, and he was my mentor. He was, you know, he said, I watched him and I followed him and I learned so much from him. And what a great thing to be able to do that. Most of us can't. Most of us have friends in our childhood, and then we leave them when we go to college and make them new friends. And then we leave them when we get a job somewhere and we make some new friends. But so even if you just restrict it to your job, obviously we learn. I can remember folks from my Boy Scout troops, and I remember some of my teachers. I remember Mr. Burnett in high school, science teacher, what a great guy he was. And there's some teachers, I can't remember their names because they were, you know, numbskulls or whatever. But so I think that's the best piece of advice when you join a job, when you join a firehouse, a company, a station, whatever it is, when you get in somewhere into the fire service, you got to hook up with the right people. If you hook up with the wrong people, you're just going to be, you know, nitwit number three in the back step, you know?
Well, and this is where, like you said, this is where, you know, the reminder needs to be shot out there to the firefighters and the officers that are already on the job, the ones that already are there, the ones that are already comfortable, the ones that need to, like that article I told you I turned in, you know, I turned one in, and the title was Taking Someone Under Your Wing. We don't use that phrase anymore because it's something we don't do as much as we did. Where, like you said, John, you know, the more senior member and seniority, a senior member can be, golly, that can be someone with 5 years, right? I mean, it doesn't have to be someone with 25, 30 years to be the senior member in a particular department or shift. Yeah.
Yep.
Exactly. So you've got those people that, and we all know, the people that care, the people that you can tell. You know, you and I, we've talked about John Copeland in Louisville. John is one of those close to, you know, 25 to 30-year firefighters, a Marine. I remember when he came into my office years and years ago and said, Chief, you know what, I really don't want to promote. I love being a firefighter. I love riding that tower ladder. I love what I'm doing. But I don't want you to think poor of me for not wanting to promote. I'm like, John, I don't think poor of you at all. I think that's actually pretty cool that you are where you're at in your life and you realize what you want to do. The only thing I told him, he goes, I may decide to do that, but I promise you this, I'll be the best damn firefighter you had. And there's a reason why, and we even have a picture of him in our leadership book, and we talk about him. I told you about Sarah. We hired Sarah in Trophy Club, and I remember in her interview, you know, the question was from the panel, you know, describe the person that say that had the greatest impact, you know, on your young fire service career. And without hesitation, she said, that would be my mentor, John Copeland. And I went, John Copeland, like from Louisville? She goes, yes, John Copeland. I'm like, and inside I'm thinking, I already want to hire her, because if this person thinks that much, that the very first words out of her mouth is her mentor, John, and I know John, you know what I'm saying? I know him.
Right.
I know what kind of firefighter he is. There's a guy, humble. There's a guy, you talk about service, a Marine, you know what I'm saying? There's a guy, he loves right now. He teaches for the academy. He's still working. He's still working, but he teaches for the academy. He leads him in PT. He's incredible. And when here you're talking about a brand new young firefighter, and the person she's talking about that has already had the greatest impact in her life is her mentor. And again, you don't have to get paid, right? John, all you have to do is care about people, right? To be someone's mentor, to kick him in the right direction or lead him in the right direction or whatever. You just have to want to be there for him, right? It doesn't. There's no magic to it, is there?
Absolutely not. And most of the time, what we're pretty fortunate for is, I mean, the fire service, you know, you can call a lot of things, a calling and all this other romantic nonsense that I hear all the time. And some of us don't get my words mixed up with, you know, a negative attitude at all. But the point is the fire service is a little bit different. You know, we are a little bit different than the guys digging out holes and putting electric cables in the ground and planting grass on a baseball field or whatever. But there are a lot of people that love the job they do. And as long as you were a fire chief. I was never a fire chief. And I remember you saying this so many times. The most important thing a good fire chief does is hire the right people. Make sure the process is in place to hire the right. Because when you bring the right people in, everything else is easy. Then the right people come in with the right attitude, and then you have your senior people bringing your new people in. So the fact that most people in the fire service are not doing it because it's, oh, wow, it's 23-year half-pay pension and medical benefits for life. I'm definitely going for that. Forget that electric company job. Forget the financial degree I have. I'm going for that fire job. Most people don't do that, and I'd like to still think that most people don't do that. So most of the folks coming into our industry, into the work that we do, really want to be there and enjoy the work that they're doing, which is half the problem. Half the problem. You don't have to inspire these people and get them interested in the work that they do. Most people that join the fire department take a test and they're dying to get there. They're waiting. They're counting the days and the months. Having said that, now you got the putty in your hand. Now you got these people that are ready to be molded. So that's what's great about the fire service. Step one is pretty much already done for us when we get people. Most people we get, step one is done. Now we just have to start, you know, generating good examples for them and showing them the proper way to do things and maybe showing them some new things, you know, technical stuff that they might not know yet. But so, as I said, that's one of the positive things about the fire service. We have a tiny advantage over the guys that are digging holes or you know, cleaning the sewers out or whatever else people are doing, you know.
Well, and John, you mentioned something that reminded me of a story you and I tell in class, and I told you it was the one where I was teaching. It was a Saturday, and for a volunteer department, the class was made up of probably 85% volunteers, some careers, some two-hatters. And I remember I told you the story. They caught a couple runs. They caught a run on this one particular in the morning, and we took a break. And you know, the guys came back, and they're putting everything back together. And I'm walking across the apparatus floor to go to the men's room. And at the tailboard of one of the engines, there's an older company officer with a young firefighter. And I'm trying to not pay attention because I don't know if he's getting his ass chewed or whatever, you know, that kind of thing, or a little mentoring going on there, or, you know, a little coaching. And I remember him saying, John, if you remember this story, I remember him saying to this young firefighter, this is what I heard. As I walk by, he goes, So what are you doing Tuesday night about 7:30? And the kid says nothing. He goes, okay, there's usually nobody up here on Tuesday nights. You and I, you come up here. I'm going to meet you here at 7:00. You and I are going to work on our air packs together. And so it compelled me. I think I told this after everything else. I got this kind of size. Okay, I couldn't help it over here. Please, between you and I, what's going on? He goes, well, he had a problem on the call with his air pack. He's been having some problems. And you know what? I just don't want. You know, we don't have to put on a show for anybody else. I want him to come in. He's going to meet me here on Tuesday, and it's just going to be he and I. We're going to do our donning, doffing together. And I think I told you this, John. I said, I wanted to work for the guy. You know what I'm saying? I wanted to I wanted to work for the guy. I mean, you want to talk about, you know, your legacy. You want to talk about having an impact, making a difference. Eddie Enright's leave it a little bit better for the next guy. Here's a guy that you know, no fanfare, you know, doesn't he's not looking. In fact, he made a point of seeing this, talking to this kid, kind of like semi-private, away from everybody else, and wasn't making a big to-do about it. And I think there's so many people in our careers, in our lives, that are doing that and have done that, and in such a cool way that, you know, there is no pats in the back, no fanfare, because the good ones don't want it, John, right? The good ones don't want – they don't want to hear that stuff. You know what I'm saying? They it's nice,
you know,
to say, hey, thanks, I appreciate it.
You couldn't be more right.
Go ahead.
And it's, I think that's I think that's another dying skill in the fire service. Maybe not dying, but I see it around a little bit less now than maybe I used to with the older folks, maybe the generation ahead of me. You know, the humility, the quiet guys that are just working hard and doing the right thing all the time and never calling attention to anything. Hey, Lou, come on down. Look what we're doing, or look what just happened, or look, you know, and again, I have no problem with people being happy and proud about stuff that they're doing that's good, but there's an element of humility, I think, that I think is necessary. I'm not knocking anybody that's proud of what they do and happy that they're having success, you know, helping somebody else or whatever. But I think humility and being humble and those other traits that we talked about, I mean, we talk about them in a leadership context most of the time, but and I understand leadership exists in lots of different levels and lots of different arenas all over the place. It's not always just boss and firefighter or officer and firefighter, a leadership, you know, relationship. But it just could be people just getting the job done and feeling good about that and not worried about, you know, who's benefiting and the fact that we talk about when an officer gets praised by his superior for a job well done, how you know, deflect the praise and say, wait a minute, chief, you know what? Why don't you go in the kitchen and tell the guys? They really worked hard on that engine. I just asked them to do it this morning because it was written in the book. They're the ones who really worked all morning on it. So I'm sure they would love to hear from you. You know, and Baker said it this morning at Bush's funeral this morning. Again, the second set of, you know, speeches. And he said that he would always say I when he was talking about when things went wrong, and we'd always say we when things went right. You know, and those are simple lessons that we can teach people. Those are conscious, simple things to remember, that if you start doing it, people take notice, and your people work harder for you when they know you appreciate. What was that? Albert Einstein? I could live a month on one top line. How true is that?
Mark Twain.
How true is that?
Yeah.
From a boss, you know.
Well, exactly, and it just, you know, sometimes I think, you know, and we've brought this up before. I'm always amazed. You brought up humility. I have no problem going on Facebook or Twitter and posting, thank you. You know, I'm going to be in Amboy this weekend with our good friend, Chief Jeff Bryant and his family, and the Amboy Fire Department, one of the model volunteer fire departments in the country. I have no problem, you know, posting a picture, you know, when he made you and I honorary fire chiefs and saying, you know, extremely honored, you know, that they did that. But I guess I sometimes, you know, maybe it sounds like I'm talking on two sides of my mouth, but at the same time, you know, to take a picture of the glass little plaque they gave you and say, I'm so humbled and honored to be presented with this leadership. I'm like, you know what I'm saying? It's the honorary awards and all stuff. I don't know how you say you're humbled when you're posting a picture of the little glass thing they gave you.
Of your own plaque.
Of your own plaque.
Well,
I mean, you know,
George Bush said that. Yeah, I mean, we're talking, it's like the George Bush show tonight, but George Bush said that too. He said, you know what? If you're doing good stuff, plenty of people will notice it. Let them mention it. You know, he said, you don't have to mention it, you know, and you know,
well,
in a much more simple way. That's so true.
And I have in front of me the letter, and you hit on a couple of things already, which I love. That's what made me think about it. I pulled up the letter, John, that he wrote to that class, to those kids. The question and his answer to them in his letter was, you know, I cannot single out the one greatest challenge in my life. I've had a lot of challenges, and my advice to young people might be as follows. And then the first one was, don't get down when your life takes a bad turn. Out of adversity comes challenge and often success. Don't blame others for your setbacks. When things go well, always give credit to others. That's what you just mentioned, John. Don't talk all the time. Listen to your friends and mentors and learn from them. Don't brag about yourself. Let others point out your virtues and your strong points. You just mentioned that one as well. That's what made me think about this. Give someone else a hand. When a friend is hurting, show that friend you care. Nobody likes an overbearing big shot. As you succeed, be kind to people. Thank those who help you along the way. The second last one is don't be afraid to shed a tear when your heart is broken because a friend is hurting. And the last one is say your prayers. And so many things you just talked about. We're talking about, you know, legacies and you know, creating, building a legacy. I think I want to throw this out there. We've talked about push and reset buttons before. And I think some people kind of give up on themselves, John, when it comes to the impact they can have on others, because maybe they went through a bad moment, a rough spot in the road or whatever, that they don't know it's okay to push a reset button. It's okay to stop, catch your breath, you know, change direction a little bit, push that reset button, like we said, shake your Etch-A-Sketch, and move in a different direction, and you still can have an impact on someone's life. And I think some people give up on themselves. I think some people don't realize, John, when you talk legacy, when you talk about the impact on others' lives, just what they can do for other people. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And I'm not mm-hmm. saying they should go out and look for it. I don't think they realize right. just what they're like. I don't think this guy, this company officer at his volunteer department, that was not his intention. That's the cool part about it. You know, meet me here on Tuesday at 7 o'clock. We're both going to go over our air packs together. You want to talk about an impact person? Someone, I mean, that's making a difference.
And that young officer for a long, long time. And that young firefighter may someday be the officer sitting on the back step saying to a future young firefighter, "Hey, meet me down here tomorrow, and we'll work on that." You know, so you never realize how far that impact can go.
Well, isn't that true, though? Isn't it true that that's what most of us do? That pretty much a lot of what we do isn't new to us. It's things we've seen or witnessed or had done to
Absolutely.
Us or whatever.
Absolutely.
You know,
Absolutely.
Let's go back to Chief Joey
B.
Go ahead.
I want to talk about that reset button for a minute, because the reset button is a great lesson. That's a great lesson. You know, there are some of us that have gone off the straight and narrow, gone down the wrong path, maybe started to – other things in your life became more important than the job, or maybe they got a little cynical, or maybe they lost a promotion or didn't get a promotion. Like you said, and a couple of years later, months or years, whenever it is, they discover, you know what, it's not too late, and they press the reset button. What I want people to realize is sometimes you got to set the reset button or press the reset button for someone else. Sometimes so you're the lieutenant working with this guy that you can't get off the couch.
That's a great point.
He's laying up, doesn't put a lot of time in, and you like the guy, and he's been around a long time, but he's really not full of energy, and if you had to put it on a scale of 1 to 10, he's like a solid 4. You know, sometimes you can help that guy press the reset button, or sometimes you just say, "Hey, are you going to lay here for the rest of your career, or are you going to come out and help me with some of these young firefighters?" So sometimes you can help somebody else realize that maybe they need to press the reset button. Maybe not you, maybe one of the people on your crew or one of your fellow officers, you know.
Well, exactly. And I just mentioned it's a great point, because Sometimes you have to say something to someone, especially as a boss, as a leader, as a senior firefighter, that the reality, John, they may not want to hear it at that moment. You know what I'm saying? How many stories do we talk about? I've told stories, right? I talk about Chief Bob Rubel. If it weren't for him, I wouldn't be in the fire service today. And I really, the first time he chewed my ass out in his office, I wanted no part of it, and I was upset, and my ears were hot, and I was mad. I went from being mad, I wanted to cry. Then the second time when he chewed me out, I realized he was right, and I changed. And you know, so, you know, like we said before, sometimes the decisions you make, or sometimes having to kind of remind someone or coax them or coach them or counsel them or whatever, it may not come with, you know, birthday cakes and sparklers and stuff. Sometimes it may, you know what I'm saying? It's one of those things that they have to hear. And you're actually saving someone's career in the meantime, right?
Right. Absolutely. Uncomfortable comments. Listen, like we've said before, like I've said before to lots of people in lots of different situations, lots of different relationships, whether it was to be teaching guys for promotion, as a captain of 48 engines, some of our young firefighters, whether, you know, teaching a class somewhere else to another fire department. If you want to be in a leadership role, whether it's a senior firefighter of a company somewhere, whether you want to be an officer or a captain or maybe a battalion chief or whatever it is, you have to be prepared to do that. You have to be prepared to thrust yourself into uncomfortable situations, whether it be verbal situations, whether it be applying discipline, whether it be applying guidance, whether it be applying criticism, you know, positive criticism. You have to be ready to do that. You have to be ready to put yourself in uncomfortable situations, or you really are not going to be able to be a good officer or boss or leader. You're just not going to be able to do it. And as I've said maybe 1,000 times, If you're not comfortable doing that, then stay in the crew compartment with the rest of the firefighters and break some windows and pull some hose and have fun and go home and feel good about it. But if you want to ride the front seat, or if you want to be a leader in some other role or capacity in the fire service or anywhere else, frankly, don't, you know, the guy that owns a bakery has to yell at somebody once in a while too for burning the damn bread. You know what I'm saying? You got to be able and ready to deliver some harsh words to people once in a while and say, hey, that's not what we're doing around here. I don't want it, you know. As a matter of fact, I watched tonight on the news with great disdain, and I just couldn't believe it. There was a story on I forget if it was the national news or just the New York City news, but it doesn't really matter. It was on the television, and it was news about an email that had been written by a young girl, a high school girl, who was a waitress in a local restaurant, and I think a young man in the high school was killed in a car accident, and she was asking for a day off or something. I don't have all the details, but it doesn't really matter. And saying, but I don't want to lose my spot, and I still want to have a job. And like the guy who owned the restaurant wrote back and said, listen, I really don't care. All your high schoolers and all your emergencies and all your days off and everything else. He said, I'm trying to run a restaurant here. If you don't come in tomorrow, you know, go somewhere else to find a job. And the whole world is ganging up on this guy. Don't go to Restaurant 72. The guy's a terrible guy, and he's insensitive, and he's not nice. And he said, and he made somebody feel awful. And I'm saying to myself, and here's a guy running a restaurant. He's got 12 employees, and he needs 12 employees on duty every day to keep his restaurant going. And people are calling in sick or tapping out for funerals or saying I got a flat tire or my dog ate my homework. Or, you know what I'm saying? And I'm not defending the guy, but I'm saying sometimes people have stuff going on in their lives, and that's just the way he is. And I'm saying to myself, and we've said it before, you don't have to comply or conform to our behavior on duty or off duty in the fire department. But if you don't conform, then you can't work for the fire department. You know, and that's the way it is. If you want to be in a leadership role, if you want to be a mentor, if you want to be an example, if you want to, you know, set the stage for some new people and help them along in their career, sometimes you have to have some uncomfortable conversations with them about things that are either being done or not being done right or things that have been overlooked. And obviously, it's always better to add a tinge of niceness or be cordial rather than being so stern. But some people are just not cordial. You know, everybody is not the same. Everybody doesn't have a master's degree in niceties. You know what I'm saying? Some guys are just a little rougher around the edges, and sometimes you're just going to have to deal with it, you know?
Well, exactly. And, you know, that's back to the whole, you know, where we're at with things, with it, whether people are accepting the fact that not everybody's perfect and that it's okay to not be perfect and it's okay to not be the best, and it's okay to not be number one. That, you know, there's different levels in life for everything, and it's I think we waste so much time trying to figure out how to place, if we will, how to place ourselves, that we just waste time. We waste time worried about stuff that really isn't going on. And, you know, I just sit here, and I was mentioning, you know, the stories, when we're talking legacy and talking mentors, John, you sitting there listening, I wish somebody would videotape the Chief Joey D. Did he do the Friday night talk again?
Yeah.
The stories and the stuff, buddy, just talking about the people that I'm just, oh my God, what an amazing. Somebody should videotape that. You know what I'm saying? It's just absolutely amazing. Talking about the people that, and some are in that room that are actually almost embarrassed that he's even talking about them in such a way, because,
right,
like I said, there's no, okay, go down to Avenue B and go to the second floor. They're going to give you your legacy, you know, membership card. You know what I'm saying? It's, you know, we just talked about those people are the ones that, in most cases, don't want that attention. And, you know, but it's not going to happen unless you're willing to care about people. Like we said before, it's not going to happen if you want to make those uncomfortable talks sometimes, those points to people,
right,
and so
right.
forth.
And, you know what I'm not happy with, as well, there's a bunch of shit that I'm not happy with, but one of the things I'm not happy with is, you know, in the modern day, I'm not going to say the political world, but really just the human world, really just the human relations, you know, of people on different sides of arguments, whether it's political, whether it's social, whether it's something at the job, whether it's a discipline issue, is that everybody does not think the same. Like, for example, I downloaded. I went to iTunes today and I downloaded. I purchased for like between 99 cents and $1.29 about four different versions by four different artists. Baby, It's Cold Outside. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh yeah, yeah.
On the TV in the past couple of days has been this uproar in, I guess, Snowflake Land or somewhere. I'm not quite sure where it started, about some of the wording in this 70-year-old song or 77-year-old song, Baby, It's Cold Outside. It's really a holiday classic. I could sing the whole thing to you right now if you want me to. But there are people upset about that song because they think there's some sexual impropriety or words or something in there, and I can't quite figure out what it is. And everybody's of the belief now in modern day America, right now, 2018, December 2018, that there's like right ways and wrong ways. They're banning this song in some places, a 77-year-old Christmas song. They're banning it in some places. I mean, if you would have said that 10 or 20 years ago, that they'd be banning songs and banning words from in America, you'd say you're out of your mind. You know, everybody thinks and acts and deals with things a little bit differently. And people, I mean, maybe I'm going to have to get over this, you know, but I think people really have to get over the idea that sometimes they're going to be uncomfortable. So listen to this. I'm watching Alaska State Troopers last night on television, and some young dude, you know, 23-year-old trooper up there in the troop car driving down the road, responding to a report of a moose in the road. Now, I'm thinking a moose got hit, but no, the moose was alive, and the snow was deep. And he said, you know, and he's talking to the camera person that's in the car with him. He says, when the snow gets deep here in December and January, he said, sometimes the moose will just break out onto the road just to walk for a mile without trudging through the, you know, chest deep snow. It's a lot easier for them. They can make some time, you know. He said, but it's dangerous out here on the road for them. A lot of them get hit. He said, hundreds and hundreds of moose are killed every year out on the road. He said, so when we get a call for a moose out on the road, you know, I try and get there as quick as I can and try and sort of, not nudge them, because it wouldn't actually touch them or anything, but he said, try and sort of scare them back off the road. So here he is verbally sort of explaining to the guy with the camera in the car, and there's the moose right in front of him, just sort of clopping along. He's not running, and he's not walking. It's somewhere in between, and the trooper's behind him. He said, oh, I'm not going to use the siren. He said, I don't want to get too close, because I don't want to upset him. I want to keep him nice and calm. And I'm saying to myself, really? You don't want to upset him? If he gets hit by that tractor trailer that's coming in the other direction, he's going to be really upset. Blow the siren, beep your horn, get really close to him, see if you can reach him. Maybe you can hit him with the nightstick and get him off the damn road. Everybody's so worried about how the moose is going to feel about being scared off the road, rather than worrying about that the moose is going to be dead in a minute if we don't scare him off the road. And I'm not saying that people are a moose, but sometimes you just got to get to the point. Sometimes you just got to spit it out and say, hey, Billy and Tommy, don't do that again. And sometimes that's all you have to do. You don't have to make it a level one off-road or level one recorded disciplinary action or anything like that. Sometimes you can just say something to somebody and solve a problem, and they quickly say, holy shit, I guess we shouldn't have been doing that. And the problem is all solved, you know? So I know it's just me, Caveman John, talking, but everybody's different. And, you know, different people do things different ways. I'm not making excuses for people that are abusive or anything like that, no. But somewhere in between, you know, being, you know, the fairy godmother and Satan himself. Somewhere in between those two is where everybody is, you know, and everybody has sort of a different way of doing things. I think we all got to be a little bit more receptive to that, you know.
Well, and I agree. I think we're doing a disservice by not, you know, we fix a lot of problems for a lot of fire departments, you know. We go fix a lot of stuff, and part of that is just that. It's dealing with people that didn't deal with something they should have dealt with because they don't want to hurt someone's feelings. And you don't have to be an ass. You know, you don't have to be nasty, but, you know, once in a while, I mean, if it wasn't for my chief having a loud discussion with me, like I said, I wouldn't be here today, you know.
Right,
You know, I can't imagine.
You know, nasty sometimes is on the receiving end. I have said stuff to people in the fire department and in Boy Scouts and in all sorts of places where I've done things. I've said stuff to people where an hour later or a day later, someone would come up to me, one of the other chiefs or another officer, and say, man, you were a little tough on Billy, huh? I said, what? Yesterday morning, down the apparatus floor, you really laced into him. I said, get the hell out of here. I said, you'll hear the crying when I lace it to somebody. I wasn't lacing it to him. I said, I just saw him doing something. I just jumped on him right away. So my point is, I didn't even think really being rough on the guy. I was just sort of being me. But the guy that came up to me the next day thought I was over the a little bit. He thought I was being a little harsh with the guy. Why? Because that's what he thinks. I think one thing, he thinks another thing. And if there's five more guys in the house, there's probably four more opinions on that, you know? So, I don't know. I guess if everybody should just be a little bit more receptive and a little bit more open-minded, that there are other ways to do things. And like I said, I'm in no way, shape, or form justifying people being rude or nasty or abusive. But some people are a little bit more on the loud, abrupt side, and some people are a little bit more on the soft-spoken side, you know? So that's all.
That is all. Well, again, there is no book out there on if you're one of our listeners, there's no book. I'm sure there's books on legacies and people and and stuff. But I don't think there's really a good one, if you will, when it comes to here's a step-by-step guide. Aside from those that can tell you and talk to you about people like we were talking about President Bush tonight, and other people, and people in our lives that have made a difference, the impact makers, the ones, volunteer career firefighters, it doesn't matter, in people's lives. I love that Mike Rose show, Returning the Favor. I don't know if you've seen those, John, Returning the Favor. Talk about people. He just did one with this guy in St. Louis that runs out of a church. He has a sports supply like store. He gets everything's donated, and if you need a new pair of cleats, you come in and you trade in your old pair. You have to trade something in and you get a new pair. And some people have been going to them for years, and some of these people, some of these kids, they don't have the money for a $500 baseball bat, a 60 pair of cleats, a 6 hour pair of cleats, and all that stuff. And this guy's doing it. I mean, just incredible. And if you have a chance, folks, watch Returning the Favor with Mike Rowe on Facebook. But here's a guy, you talk about legacy, John, you talk about an impact maker, and he's not in the fire service. I guess my point is it doesn't take much. How about this, John? We can kind of end things tonight. It doesn't take much to be a good person. It doesn't really take that much hard work to be a good person and help someone out, right? I mean, to make a difference in someone's life.
Right.
Well,
that's like they told you. The important stuff you needed to know. Remember, you've heard this because you're gonna finish the statement for me. All the important stuff about life that you ever needed to know, you learned where?
Well, at home.
In kindergarten. That's a famous thing out there. All the important stuff you needed to learn about life, you learned in kindergarten. Be nice to people. Clean up after yourself. Come in early. All those little things. They're all so easy.
It is. It's not as complicated as people make it out to be. And it's kind of fun in our business, in our profession with the fire service. Every now and then you see a story. You've heard the stories of the things the guys have done in Louisville and other people where they stopped and helped someone. It had nothing to do with fighting fires. They stayed afterwards and helped someone. And I'm glad people make a big deal about it because it's a big deal about a little thing that's a big deal, if that makes sense.
If one more person
goes out of the way. What's that, Jeff?
And you've been in a lot of firehouses that were just kindergarten, right?
Exactly.
I've been in a kindergarten class. I thought I was in a kindergarten class.
Hey, folks, you've been listening to Command Post on Fire Engineering Talk Radio with Chief John Salk and Chief Rick Lasky. John, the message, finishing message, closing message on your legacy to our listeners, to someone's legacy.
You know what? I mean, there's so many different phrases and ideologies out there that we can talk about, but be yourself. We say that all the time. Be yourself. Be nice. Do your job. I mean, I couldn't ask for any more from anybody, any place that I've ever been, if you do those three things.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Make a difference. Find someone, find someone tomorrow. Find someone next week. Don't pass up an opportunity, folks, to make a difference in somebody else's life. I used to say for years, John, if you left tomorrow, if you left your shift, left your department, if you hung your boots up tomorrow, what would they say about you? And hopefully it'll be, you know, it may not all be like warm and fuzzy stuff, but they, you know what, if they say, hey, guy made a difference in my life, the guy always had my back, he always knew he cared about us, it's pretty easy to go out and find someone and make a difference. Like, you say it all the time, John, you never know how the day's going to end. Never know how the day's going to end. Don't waste an opportunity, folks, to have an impact in somebody else's life. So, hey, our next show is Thursday, January 24th at 6:30 Central, 7:30 Eastern. That's January 24th. Where John and I are on Facebook and Twitter, and that's right. We'll be talking about that. Our website, you can find John at firecommandtraining.com. That's firecommandtraining.com. He has all his contact information. You can find me at prideandownership.com. We've got all our phone numbers and information on there as well. Buddy, thanks for another great night, another great show.
All right, great. Hope everybody out there took something away tonight.
Perfect, perfect. Hey, in closing, folks, we never end the show without asking you to please keep the men and women serving in our armed forces in your thoughts and prayers, as well as our brothers and sisters in our law enforcement family. And remember, never forgetting means just that, never forgetting. Be safe and God bless.